All right, there you go.
All right. I do a lot of volunteer work in my community, and recently I visited an AIDS hospice. And what I noticed was about 90% of the residents of this hospice were African American. So I began to, you know, my curiosity got the best of me, and I began to kind of want to get a sense and a feel as to why, you know, people were residing here and where were their families and support. And the answers that I got, the response that I got was pretty disheartening, to say the least. Because of the stigma attached to HIV and AIDS, a lot of people expressed to me the cold shoulder that they received from our community. So, I began to kind of do a little research, and as we all know, HIV and AIDS is ripping Black communities apart globally, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was really saddened at the fact that in the health, we are so, oh, wow, gosh, I so many thoughts are going together, so give me a minute so I can, I was really saddened and disheartened that, you know, first of all, Black women between the ages of 16 to 24 account for 50% of all new HIV infections in this country. Okay.
How? What percentage?
16? You said 16?
50 between that, in that age demographic.
50?
50.
50. 50.
Wow, what?
That's half.
No, wait. Hold on. 50%, but you said
of new.
No, I hear you, but you said, hold on, when you said 15 from the ages 1-5 or 1-6 to 2-5.
1-6 to 25. To 26. Yes.
16-year-olds were infected with HIV in this hospital?
Yes. Jesus. Yes. Okay.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
That's scary.
That's pretty scary,
especially if you have children within that age demographic. I myself have a 21-year-old daughter. Yeek. Yeek. Wow. So
I got a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 21-year-old grandson.
There you go. It's scary. So I began to go ahead. And what even amazed me even more so, what astonished me even more so, right, is within our community, how we still continue to have reckless sex. Let's just put this out there. Unprotected sex. I don't like to sound crude. And it really left me feeling pretty sad. Because once again, we're not really taking care of our own, right?
No, we aren't.
We're not. And we're dropping the ball, because what I see, once again, in my community is the glorification of unprotected sex before I get into that, just the behaviors that lead up to that, right?
Correct.
And I'm astonished at the elders. Once again, I spoke about this last week as to how we have dropped the ball, in particular with this issue, because we, Wow, I'm.
You better be done with that work.
This makes me really emotional because this hospice that I volunteer in, these were younger folks. These were people that were younger than myself, you know, early to mid-20s. And my question, and my not so much as a question, but it's all, I'm wondering, right, why are we not addressing that issue the way we need to? Why do we continue to sweep this under the rug? Why is it that we are not educating our kids about those risky behaviors and setting the example? And why are we allowing, why are we not taking care of our own? There's so many thoughts that go into this, and I'm just kind of, I want to hear where everybody else is at. I'm just going to put that out there. I want to hear where everybody else is at with that. I continue to volunteer at this hospice because there is a need for compassion within our community, right? And
I'm
a person that, as I stated to, you know, Brother Lou, I literally changed careers. I had a pretty lucrative career at one point, and I totally dedicated my whole rest of my life to the cause because I feel that there not aren't enough soldiers. And I've chose to make my life, rest of my life, to dedicate to bring awareness to different social issues that affect our community.
Right.
And I just kind of want to hear where everybody's thoughts in regards to STDs and how it's affecting Black communities, not just here in the United States, but globally. And just kind of want to hear where everybody is at. And
okay, hold on. First, all right, so, you know, I want to kind of rein it in, right? First, we can only we can only worry about what's going on and here, because that's all we can affect. Because
I respect that.
Right. If you start talking about around the world, then we got whole other different types of politics you got to deal with and things like that. We have no control, no influence, specifically like Africa, right? So some of the places that are ravaged are controlled by dictators. And there have been efforts made by people who have way more money and way more power than we. And basically those dictators take the money and then use it to, like, just squander it. Real quick, I want to acknowledge a caller from the 702 area code who just came on the call. I want to tag you.
Peace, family. This is the ward residence. We just signed up with as a result of the email. I believe it was off of Facebook. We got it off. Yeah.
Right.
And,
so your first name? Your first name, brother?
My name is Rome, and my wife's name is Thais.
Okay.
Thais, fine.
Okay. So wait. So brother Rome, is your wife one as well?
Yes, sir. She is.
So brother Rome, how do you spell that, brother? Is that Rome or Roan, R-O-N-E?
R-O-M-E, correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, there we go. Thank you for coming on the call. So what we were doing, what we were discussing, so today is a little different because of the playoffs. We are not as deep as we normally are. So we're basically just having an open discussion. We want to welcome you, though. This is your first town hall. And basically what this organization is about discussions and ways that we can provide solutions or possible solutions to problems that are affecting the Black community. So right now, the brother D from Chicago, he's saying that he volunteers at a hospice for HIV and AIDS. He's saying that the majority of the residents in that hospice are young African Americans as opposed to older ones. And he is saying that he's really concerned about the risky behavior said that they were between the ages of 16 and 25, I believe. And he said that demographic makes up 50% of all new HIV cases. Now, brother, is that all new HIV cases in America, period, or just in the black community? Brother D.
And the black, and specifically in my state, in Illinois.
Oh, in Illinois.
In Illinois. I should have made that clear, and I apologize for that oversight. But specifically here in my state of Illinois and in Chicago, Cook County, which encompasses the city of Chicago and the Cook County suburbs.
Okay.
So that's right. Scary to me.
And so now we are just basically having an open discussion in regards to that. And if you feel like contributing, then you know, contributing to the conversation, you or your wife, then by all means. So the brother wants to know, basically you want to know what should we be doing in terms of educating the youth about this risky behavior. Is that what you're getting at, brother?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And bringing awareness.
Okay.
All right.
The thing is, I know here in Michigan, it could be addressed in schools, but in Michigan, where I am, they would send a no home to the parents, and the parents could excuse their kids from that, from even participating in any kind of discussion dealing with that sort of thing. And a lot of times that's what happens, and the parents are not informing the kids. So maybe where we need to start is with the parents.
Yes.
Well, let's just take it. So you have a 16-year-old. You have a 16-year-old that's engaging in risky behavior or things like that. Realistically speaking, how much attention you think that child is going to pay to what the parent says?
Probably not.
So I'm thinking about it when I was 16 years old. You couldn't stop me, couldn't stop the girls. And because you're that young, you don't realize that you're even, it wasn't that big of a, it had just came on the scene, AIDS and HIV, but it wasn't like really that big a thing when I was young. Like crabs was like the biggest thing you probably have to worry about. Who's spreading it? That's what I want to know. So like, is that older guys engaging with younger women? Like who's giving it to 16-year-olds? That's what I want to know.
Can I intervene really quick?
Yes.
I just want to say, because I'm a mom and we got older kids to younger kids, that the first problem is that the kids have an identity crisis. You know what I mean? Like they really they like to follow the leader. You know, when we were coming up, we had our own little thing. But now this generation, they follow what they see. Like these children do not have their own, mind, their own train of thought. It's the music, it's the crowd of people they hang around with. And it's, it's a large proportion and more than it is a small proportion of them.
Yeah.
And it's majority the answer to your question is older men, preying on the younger women and vice versa. And
right.
Then they go and they get into these, because we lived in Las Vegas with the older girls and school, and they would have these parties with these other grown men that are out of high school, in college, would come to these high school gatherings and drink, pop pills, and do all kind of stuff with these little girls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
if I'm correct, the saliva from your mouth can pass that as well, right?
Yeah.
Saliva can pass. No.
I thought it was just like a liquid.
Body fluids
from your body.
They always said bodily fluids.
Has to be, but no, it has to be seminal. Has to be seminal fluid or blood or something like that. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Okay. Right. Okay. Okay.
So, but I mean, that's just craziness like that.
Yeah, but it depends on what disease or what sickness it is that you're talking about, because mono can be passed through the mouth. And if I'm correct, there's a certain type of hepatitis that can also be passed through the mouth.
We're talking about HIV and AIDS. He was saying that he worked he volunteers at a hospice, and he was saying that a young
when I used to take my kids to bed. When I had the chance to put my children, I would take them to bed. I would hold. And sometimes I would be sweaty through the day. And the mere sweat from my body, from hugging my child, that's what I was thinking. That when I heard about bodily fluids, I guess maybe I took that too far, because I was under the assumption that HIV can be spread in other ways than just sex.
Yeah. Like a blood transfusion.
Injection. For a long time, HIV was not only being spread through, contact sexually, but also being spread, especially in our community, through needles during the crack epidemic. Anything dealing with that, and you also need to be careful of with the whole HIV thing is as a matter, there was a post on Facebook. What they were doing is they were putting HIV infected needles in the gas handles.
They're doing that now.
While you're pumping the gas.
Yeah, they're doing that now.
Mm.
Yeah. Really?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you have to just be aware of, protect yourself. You know what I mean?
And it's not just sexual, because Bayer aspirin also, I mean, you can look this up. Back then in the 80s, they were putting, it was in the Bayer aspirin, and a lot of people was contracting HIV through taking Bayer aspirin.
Oh,
it
wow.
was an aspirin?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bear aspirin? Wow.
That's not factual at all. It's not.
Well, see, I think that's the issue. I think part of the issue is misinformation. And miseducation.
Even if it would be digested, your stomach, I can't even believe you said that. The acids in your stomach would destroy that. It can't even survive being airborne.
I think that's the issue.
Problem. They had a big case against them and everything.
They did.
You might just want to check it out.
And actually, I'm looking it up right now.
Make sure it's an actual, not a myth. Make sure it's a reputable site. Make sure, because Bayer aspirin wouldn't exist today. If Bayer aspirin, you can't transfer the disease through the air. It's not going to survive.
No.
And if you digest it and you put it in your digestive tract, your stomach, the acid in your stomach line is going to destroy it. It's not going to be able to survive. It's not going to survive like that. And that's just the science of it.
Okay, I'm looking at this site, and the site is CBS. Let's see, what did it say? CBS Money Watch. And it's from CBS News. And it says Bayer admits it paid millions in HIV infection cases, just not in English. What do you mean by that?
What do you mean?
To read the English-speaking media, you never you never know that Bayer just paid tens of millions of dollars to end a three-decade-long scandal in which the company sold HIV-contaminated blood products to hemophiliacs.
Okay, so
that's
not in
where
the,
it came
okay.
from.
Okay, so yep. okay, so blood. Okay, so not in, so not in the pill, not in the aspirin, in something to do with the blood.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So that's a total different. And mm-hmm. where and did that happen in America?
Let's see. It says thousands died of AIDS because of this.
I'm pulling it up now.
I'm looking to see where it was. I know that. They had a research. They got a research grant at the University of Florida, and it was. But you have to pick through the French and let's see. You have to pick through the French and Italian news media to find out that Bayer is finally writing checks to people who got AIDS. It's not saying where these people were.
Wow.
And Bayer is a German group. They're from Germany. That company is German.
Wow.
Okay, so it's looking like their subsidiaries, Alpha Therapeutic Corporation, Institut Mero, which sounds like a Sanofi. It sounds like one of their subsidiaries. And they sold a protein or something to, they sold us a protein that's supposed to help with blood clotting. They sold that to hemophiliacs. And due to the genetic nature of their condition, they were unable to produce them by themselves. And it caused HIV and hepatitis C. Okay, so the sister... So the sister was correct in that they were affiliated, but not the aspirin. Okay. Okay. So that's
not what the aspirin. But it doesn't say where.
No, well, I'm saying it says Asia, Latin America, France, Iran, Iraq, Ireland, because it's through these weird subsidiaries. I can't even pronounce these names. It's like Institut Mero, so that maybe is France. They have Rhone, Paulenc, Aurora, so I don't know, that maybe Portugal or something like that. They have it, you know, it was different companies that they acquired, and, you know. Sister Kokoya, how are you doing, sister? Okay, sister. But, yeah, so that's, all right, well, thank you for bringing that up. Okay, well, thank you for bringing that up.
I have a quick question, and it's kind of off topic. I just want to know. Where we are, is Brother Gamble, I believe it's Louis Gamble?
Here, brother. Yeah, I'm here, brother.
Okay, good. Just wanted to know. Good stuff. I'm excited to be here. Glad.
Right. Normally it's a little bit, we're a little bit more structured, but we don't have as many people on as we normally do. Because the game is on, I had a few people hit me and say they're not going to make it because of the game and, you know, other things going on. So we're pretty much having an open discussion. So, you know, we're allowing members to bring things to the floor. We haven't set the agenda. But what we will discuss shortly, so, you know, after the brother finished talking about what he's talking about, I just want to basically go over a little bit of, like, what the blueprint of what this organization is about and where we stand in terms of the progress and the things that we're trying to do. So,
oh, wonderful.
Okay, so anybody else wants to weigh in on the HIV thing or
yeah,
okay,
I do. Okay, I looked it up to see how it is transferred, and it's usually transferred person to person through unprotected sexual contact, or blood, including
dirty needles.
Blood transfusion, accidents in healthcare setting, and certain blood products. And then one thing that I did not know is that it is transferred through a mother's milk. So if mother's feeding, she can transfer it to the baby.
Hey, but you know what? A mother can have HIV, but the baby wouldn't. The baby's immune system would protect it. It would kick in, and the baby would take a different immune system and not be born with HIV. So that's possible. I know that's possible.
That is possible. But if the baby is breastfed, then the baby stands a great chance of getting it.
I
do know that it is not, as we thought, it is not transmitted through saliva, tears, sweat, urine, feces. It's not transferred through any of that.
Okay.
So what the main thing we've got to do is work on the behavior of that age group of and we have to start actually with those younger than that.
Part of it, with all due respect, part of it is we have to be educated, first of all.
Exactly.
And let's have to really take our head out the sand.
Correct.
As this epidemic is affecting our communities across this country, right?
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem is that nobody wants to have an honest conversation. The miseducation is part of the problem. That's why the epidemic is so high in our community. So we really need to start there. We need to address these different social issues realistically, right? And actually not just address them, but actually put action behind the addressing. Because
exactly
that part of the issue in our communities is that we pick and choose what we feel is important to fight for. And what's going on, what's happening is we have people just dropping like flies around us, right? And then we say, oh, I'm so sorry. And then we move on and we never really address. And that's what I'm seeing here in my city. And there are so many different social issues that social things that play along. Everything that's going on, everything is connected. And what I see, and I can only speak for here in Chicago, what I see is that we are so misinformed to the point that we are allowing our children, sending our children in the world misinformed, and then they in turn make unhealthy decisions, be it sexual or otherwise, and then this whole generational thing continues to go on. And that is not, and what's happening is that we women ourselves, from a health standpoint, we commit genocide within our own community, within ourselves. And it's sickening to me. It's so sickening to me. So for me, this is something that I feel is important, and we certainly can't sugarcoat it. We really need to have honest conversation and put some stop, and not just have honest conversation, but in the midst of the conversation, actually putting some action behind the conversation. So this is why I chose to bring this up. Because I was so emotionally affected by my visit at this hospice last week, I actually left it driving home actually visibly upset. Like, I was crying all the way in the 30 minutes it took me to get home. And because I was just so heartbroken at And I have to own responsibility because I'm an elder in the community. I'm part of the community. And I had to say to myself, although I can't shoulder the blame and shoulder the responsibility on my own, but I do play a role. And I do have a 21-year-old daughter. And so this is something that I feel we really have to be honest about. And part of the honesty starts with really educating ourselves about this disease and how we combat it. We need to address the other social ills that are surrounded by this. The high incarceration rate amongst our black men and women. The whole down low phenomenon. I mean, we need to address some whole serious issues because these are issues that are killing. I mean,
you just said that now. Because I'm sitting here saying, well, how is this spreading to the young age now?
We need to have an honest conversation.
That's a touchy
subject. Let's call it what it is, because that's the issue. Nobody, that's the problem. And let me tell you something. Nobody wants to address it because we want to act as if it doesn't happen, but it does. So we have brothers
it's
happening. And you know, we have black men that have been locked up in prison 30 years, right? And they're coming back out. They're getting out of prison. Hello, what do you think they've been doing there for 30 years? So, you know, I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying. So, we really.
He does have a good point there.
We need to address this for what it is. All the social ills that go along with this, the emasculation of black men, the emasculating of black women. I mean, we could get really deep into this, you know? So I chose to bring this up because this is just an inch of the social, just an inch of one of our social issues. But it's a big in our community. So I don't want to go off on a tangent. Someone else can. I don't know. I'm still visibly upset about this. You know,
if I may piggyback off of what the sister is saying, and kind of backtrack a little bit, just a little bit on what she was saying. The thing about the children is that our children are more than likely more informed about what's going on today than we are, being that they are members of the internet and jet age children. If nothing else, the only thing that is passed around more than the social diseases that we have in our community, it is the information that goes on in the world. Information is passed on, I mean, at the click of a button, literally. You know what I mean? So our children are very, very informed as to what is going on. But something you said that was very pertinent is the practices. The practices are what we need to be focusing on and endearing in our children and displaying and being role models to our children. This town hall, this meeting right here, is definitely the beginning of that, you know. And I just wanted to put a little tick mark in that point because, I mean, if nothing else, information is what is being passed without restriction.
But with all due respect, brother, with all due respect, I agree with what you're saying. But there's also a lot of misinformation, and that's where we as parents and leaders and community leaders need to step in and re-educate. You know, again, I have a 21-year-old daughter, right? And she's a millennial, if you will. I chose to raise her old school, right, in the sense that I knew everything she was doing. I guess she was one of those stalker parents, right? Like, I stalked my daughter. I stalked her. I needed to know everything that was going on with her. And I needed to know everything that was going on with her because I did not want her to get misinformation, you know. And I think that that's part of the issue is that, yeah, our kids are seeing these, this information, but how we, it's our job to make sure that they are informed properly so they're not getting misinformation, so they're not going out making reckless decisions and choices, you know. And that's kind of what, again, I can speak for where I live at,
and
where
I have in mind
in our city, you know.
What is the misinformation about AIDS and HIV do you think these children don't know?
Hello?
Number one, I think part of the misconception is that different things that I have heard is that, oh, you can't get infected if you pull out. Okay, or you can't get it if you do this or that, and I'm just, and again, I hate speaking crude, so just, or that it can't happen to me, or it only happens to homosexuals, or, you know, whew. So that's part of the misinformation. So when your people are misinformed, they, again, act recklessly.
You heard children tell you that? Like teenagers?
Yes, I have.
Wow, that if you pull it, wow. Okay, so listen, we got a few people on, and this seems to be something that everyone wants to discuss, so we're going to have to be a little bit more organized. So I'm going to put it in lecture mode. I'm going to put it in a Q&A, and then if you want to chime in regards to that, then just press *6 on your phone because there's some people that want to weigh in. Let me just switch it there. Okay, so let me unmute Brother D since this is his platform. Where are you, brother? There you go. All right, Brother D?
Yes.
Okay, so anyone? Okay, so here we go. All right, so Brother Will is in the queue. Anyone else wants to chime in on this topic? We're discussing HIV amongst our youth and, you know, ways that we could better communicate with them. If you have anything that you want to contribute, press *6 on your phone. All right, Brother Will. Go ahead, brother.
Oh, okay. I do agree with all of pretty much all of the above. I mean, you have to attack this thing from a medical standpoint. But there's one thing that's really been overlooked in more areas than just this, and that's the eating habits.
HIV?
Of this country. No. Your body being able to rejuvenate itself and your body being able to heal itself. Just from what you eat.
Let's keep it on the HIV because what you eat, we're talking about specifically the youth. So the last thing that was said before we put it in Q&A mode, he said that there's a lot of misinformation among the teenagers. So I don't think their eating habits is going to have anything to do in regards to once they actually contract the disease or maybe it has something to do with managing it, but we're talking about like ways that can possibly, you know, that could possibly be prevention. So some of the suggestions were talking to the kids and things like that. Okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Anybody else want to weigh in on this topic? Press *6 on your phone. Who is that? Brother Kareem and Brother Rome. Okay, cool. Brother Kareem, you're up first. Okay.
Good evening, Mr. Brother Kareem. I want to agree with the information, you know, because when I go into the schools and talk to the kids, the first thing they tell us is that we can't talk about race, sex, or religion. So the information is not there, and which in turn is making our children believe that they're bulletproof against this disease, you know.
Whew.
So the information has to really, really, really have to get out there, and that's why they think they're bulletproof, because the information is lacking. And, you know, it needs to be taught in the school system on a regular basis and not just bringing someone in for a day to talk about it, you know. It needs to be really taught, because our kids, and then, you know, with the drugs, like, they're really, really promiscuous these days. From the music, the drugs, mm-hmm. they're just trying all types of things. So the information is definitely lacking, and through the information lacking, it's giving them a bulletproof sense to this disease, because they really don't think that it could happen to them. And then when it does happen to, well, let's say one of their counterparts, you know, they go to the extreme to thinking that he was probably, you know, a homosexual, or, you know, things of that nature. So that's what I wanted to chime in. I do agree with the information. And then when I enter the schools, that's the first thing they tell us, that no race, sex, or religion.
Okay, thank you, brother. All right. And next we have Brother Rome. Hold on. Brother?
I'm going to be real short. Again, I'm in agreement with what's being said, because apparently, like the sister and the brother said, the information is not trickling down to our children. And what needs to happen is there needs to be, like, the reason why I joined this group was because there seemed to be a beginning or a semblance of structure that is held within a community. Finance, distribution, information, medical, all of these things. And so that is one way that we need to enrich our people, is by bringing to them a correct and exact information.
Right.
And that will dispel, if we can bring to them correct and exact information, to where they know that the information that they get from our community is true and accurate, then that will dispel some of the disinformation that our adversary is trying to feed to us.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't even think that the adversary is feeding any misinformation. I think it's more like how the brother Kareem. So for those who don't know, so he works with kids in the urban school systems, teaching them anti-violence and conflict resolution strategies and things like that. If he's saying that they're not even having like the sex ed conversations that they used to have when we were in school, then that is where that information is missing. Because when I was in school, I do recall getting that information. I remember them having a whole big thing about it. And some of you may remember, you know, in the late 80s and the 90s that, you know, there was a lot of HIV information going around, especially what happened with like Magic Johnson and all these other different, you know, celebrities that contracted it back then. So, you know, and with that said, you know, I want to invite anyone else if they have any other suggestions in regards to this conversation, because now we're kind of filling up with members. Brother Cujo, how you doing? Good to have you on the call. So now we're filling up. We got a nice group going. Started a little late, but if anyone else wants to chime in regards to this topic, press *6. And then if not, then we'll let Brother D summarize, and then we'll move on to the next topic. Because I wanted to, so now that we're in full-fledged mode, you know, I want to just kind of like go over some of the things that we normally would go over at the beginning of the call. So, you know, for our guests, for especially the brother and the sister, where this is their first time. So, Brother D, let me unmute you. Brother D.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Is there anything you want to say in summary?
I've said pretty much what I feel needs to be said. I could go on and on and on. However, I think that this is something that I agree with wholeheartedly with what Brother Kareem said, and that's why I solely feel, because this is an epidemic in our community, I feel that we really need to have an honest conversation, and we need to quit treating this as if it's something that's going to go away, because this is very real, and it's our duty to educate our children the correct way, and teach them how to be sexually responsible. And with that, I'm going to leave with that.
Okay, brother. All right, Brother Ron, you have anything in summary, or you're good? Okay, if anyone has anything else, we'll move on to the next. To the next topic. I'm sorry. Okay. So let me go. Let me fix this here. Okay. So for I want to thank everyone who's on the call. We got a late start. Again, like I said, I know some people said that they were going to be watching the game, and some people texted me and told me that they would be coming on later, or some said that they would be missing the call. But we do have a brother and sister on the call. This is their first town hall meeting. So basically, how we normally run the town hall meetings. I go into what Black Wallace Matter is about, right? So just so that you know that you're in the right place, this is an organization of brothers and sisters who are coming together because we believe that the only way the Black community is going to fix the problems that is affecting it is if we pool our resources and solve the problems ourselves. That's basically what this is about. We understand that it's good to talk, to have open discussion about some of the problems that's going on, but we understand that nothing will happen unless there is money put behind that, right? So that's what's actually going to cause the action. We have a blueprint that we follow that has been outlined in regard for the mission of this organization. And the main issues that we are addressing is poverty, unemployment, and underemployment that are affecting our brothers and sisters, and this wave of racial police brutality. The way we plan on addressing these issues is forming a member association, right, which is what this group is about. The purpose of this association is so that we can address one of the major problems in the Black community, which is the lack of unity. So this member association has, we collect membership dues, and with the membership dues, our goal is to purchase, an existing business that is already generating revenue, that is already generating profit. Then we will be able to employ more of our brothers and sisters. So when we're talking about buying an existing business, we're not talking about like a small mom and pop shop. We're talking about maybe like a supermarket chain or some large manufacturing facility or something like that, a plant or something like that. Our goal is to reach 1 million members over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. Right now, our current campaign is to get 2,000 members so that we can start with our first leg or our first phase of our plan, which is to create a shopping portal. So the reason for that is because last year we spent $1.3 trillion in consumer spending, right? So that's just basically we got paid and we just went out and brought stuff, $1.3 trillion. So we collectively have the money. And if we create this shopping portal, We have relationships with some major vendors such as Walmart, Target, JCPenney, Sears, things like that, Amazon.com. We have relationships with these vendors that will allow us to send our shoppers there, and we would be able to get a kickback or a percentage back of that, of those sales. It doesn't cost any of our members, any of the participants, it doesn't cost any of them a dime extra. So that is the first phase of what it is that we're trying to accomplish with our 2,000 members. The next phase would be to get 5,000 to 10,000 members, and then we would look for purchasing our first large-scale business. From there, we are going to create community resource centers. Now, this is where we would be able to address some of the social issues that have been brought up on the past few calls. So we had youth violence was one. This HIV/AIDS epidemic that the brother is talking about has been another. And then overall, just like, you know, the lack of knowledge of self and the lack of disrespect. I mean, the lack of respect that's just overall prevalent in our community. The way we plan on addressing that in the community resource center is by providing a place for our youth to go instead of hanging out on the street. And when these youth are at the community resource center, they will be learning trades like plumbing, electricity, and things like that. The babies, the really, really young ones, well, actually all everyone, they're going to learn, we're going to have a curriculum that's going to teach them about our heritage and give them a new definition of what it means to be Black, right? So right now, we have, like, no definition, right? So you're just Black, and it's like whatever goes on in your community is what goes on. But what we're going to do is we're going to try to instill in these children that, hey, listen, when you're Black, that means that you address your brothers and sisters as brothers and sisters. You address them, you know, and you show solidarity. You don't kill another Black person. You don't steal from another Black person. You try to help them. And if they, and if, you know, another brother or sister is doing something that is not, you know, making us look right, you know, in the eyes of white people or whoever, or, you know, ourselves, you pull their coat and you let them know, hey, listen, brother, you should be doing this. Hey, sister, you should be doing that. That's, I personally don't feel that that's going to work with the generation now, not with our older generation, right, because we're all too set in our ways. I do think that this would work by addressing the babies because they don't know what's going on. They don't know how to act. And we want to work, we want to start in one large major Black city, so maybe someplace like Chicago or Atlanta or Philly or Detroit or, you know, one of the cities like that where we're able to show the whole Black community, hey, look, this is something that we funded ourselves, this is something that we did ourselves, and look at the results. And from there, the third phase is to hire lawyers and lobbyists in Washington. And that's the only way we're actually going to be able to meet these people on their level. They only understand money and politics. They don't understand or respect marching, protesting, kicking, screaming, and whining. They laugh at that. And I even was doing some research prior to coming up with the blueprint. And so, like, when they know that there's going to be certain towns where Black Lives Matter is going to go and protest or whoever, and there may be rioting and protesting, they have extra insurance for that. So for some of those businesses, that's actually like a boon to them, right? So we definitely have to be, we have to play the game the way that they play the game. And there are models. There are people that have been persecuted, that have been slandered and all these other things. So maybe they weren't enslaved, but they have been persecuted, and yet they still are able to thrive under this white supremacist situation or organization or system or whatever you want to call it. They are not making any excuses, and it's time that we stop making excuses. Our votes are very, very powerful. That's why we need the 1 million members, because we need to rally our people, and we need for them to understand that their votes and their money is basically all the power we need. And when I say the money, that doesn't necessarily even mean the spending. That means even boycotting. So if a company does something that we don't like or we don't agree with or goes against what we stand for, you know what? We don't shop with you anymore. Being that we are the largest consumers in this country, they will feel the pain. 100% they will feel the pain. So it's been proven over and over, and, you know, I have, like, some examples, like Target. Target pissed off a group of people. They boycotted it. Target lost 16 billion this past year because they boycotted them over these gender fluid bathrooms. You saw what happened when they beat up the Asian guy on the airplane. That company United, they lost something like 600 million, like the first next like 600 or 800 million within like the first week. Because the Asians boycotted them and all these other people boycotted them. So it's definitely an effective strategy. And so for the guests on the call, if you haven't watched The Blueprint, we want to ask you to watch The Blueprint. It's about 30-some-odd minutes. It outlines everything that I'm saying to you in full detail. And then we would like to ask you to become a member if this resonates with you. So membership dues are $10, $25, or $50. That's they come out every month. And you're able to just, you know, dip your toe in and find out if this is something for you. You would, once you become a member, you're going to be in constant contact with me. My name's Brother Lou. Every single member here has my direct number. Every single member here calls me. We have multi-hour conversations. So, you know, people like, you know, well, what's this about? I'm not running anywhere. I don't need to take anyone's money and run off or whatever it is. If you're a member for 3 months and you don't feel that this is right for you, then you can get back your 3 months of membership dues if that's what you want to do, if we're not moving fast enough for you and all of that. But at this stage, the founding members, everyone, we need all hands on deck. So every member here, I call, I say, hey, listen, this is something I'm trying to get done. Can you help, right? Well, what do you think about this? And depending on your area of expertise, I actually come to you and ask you for your input. So this is not like a dictatorship or whatever it is. This is like everyone has their say. So if any of the guests or even any of the other members, anyone on the call, if you have any questions in regards to how, you know, how this organization is going to work, why we need the association, like I said, is for unity, and basically it's like a union. You know, I'll open the lines up for Q&A, and let me do that now and ask your question, and I will unmute some of the other members, and some of the other members could answer some things for you as well. Okay, so you can press *6. On your phone if you have any questions or any comments. Okay. Let's see here. We have, okay, so we have Brother Roan and we have Sister Bonnie. Brother Roan, you can, let's see. You're on. Hello?
Hi. This is Brother Roan again. Peace, family. God bless to the gods. In your description of this community and what we're doing, you made a statement as to being black. I have a quick question. Are we accepting any group or any quote-unquote race of people to our group, or is it only black members?
We are accepting their money, so like when I go to confer about what's going on, they won't have any leadership roles. So the problem that we have, our organizations always become co-opted or watered down, right? So other groups, they get in. So there were laws that were put on the books for us. the Jews, the women, and everybody else, the LGBT community, everyone has come aboard and they've made it the minorities. And they have been able to use those rules and laws and things better than we have. And that's the problem. And so black people, we need to learn how to freaking organize. We need to learn how to do this stuff. So I have no problem taking instruction and getting input or learning from other ethnic groups that have already organized. But in terms of us actually doing what needs to be done and implementing, it has to be us, because we need to learn how to do something. We never do anything on our own. We don't have not one organization. The NAACP was founded in some Jewish guy's living room. We don't have anything. So that's the stance on that. And it's not meant to be offensive. It's real. It's serious. Like, when something happens in the black community, we're usually standing there by ourselves. There's really no one else standing there next to us, arm in arm. Black Lives Matter is something different, but that's because of their funding. So the guy who funds them wants social disruption. So they have white people, as part of it, but they're not, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think they're doing anything that effective. The marching and the protest means nothing.
Okay. Right. So I understand that, and I agree totally with you and everything that you just said. We'll take the money, and for all points and purposes, we'll take the advice. But my question speaks to our community in itself. Who do we consider a part of the roster? Who meets the criteria as part of the people, the group that are part of this movement, the group that are, quote unquote, black people?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. The nature of our marketing and the way that the presentation is and the way that this thing is structured, it kind of sifts and sorts people anyway. It's not complicated by any means, but what happens is, so some of the posts that we have on Facebook, you would know this from anything. Some of the brothers and sisters are our brothers and sisters. They like the nonsense, right? But if you look at how we post it, we piggyback our message of positivity along with that. And so for those that are able to see past the nonsense and catch the message, they usually find themselves here. And so you've sifted and sorted yourself anyway. I get so many calls during the week, and not even really emails, but I get a lot of calls and I get a lot of messages on Facebook for people who are really, really caught up in like the nonsense, the sensationalist stuff. And, I try to be cordial, but I'm like, that is not the purpose of this organization. It's like, did you even read what we're about? Did you read, the comments under the post? Did you click over to the website? Did you go through the survey? The answer is usually no. So that, like I said, so that in itself, once a person is on this side of the fence and talking with us, then we know that, okay, cool, they have already jumped a few hurdles in order to even be here. We have a lot of people that come on the calls and then they never return. We have people who come on calls and then actually unsubscribe from getting further notifications about town hall meetings, right? So it's like they're not feeling what this is about. If you've been trying to talk about anything in regards to empowering our people or anything positive, it's really, really hard to hold their attention with this kind of conversation, unless the brother or sister you're talking to is truly passionate or truly concerned about this. And that's just basically what it is. So we realize that the very nature of what this is will weed out those who aren't serious, those who aren't interested. Does that Does that answer it for you, or? Hello, brother?
Yes. I'm here, brother.
Yeah, you have. I thought my phone hung up on you.
No. We here, definitely. Okay, so reading between the lines, I'll ask you this. Based upon, I understand that we are attempting to create a relationship between the major vendors of the world in order to increase our profit per capita. You get what I'm saying? But I think that our purpose would be more served if we increase a network of people that we consider part of our union, part of our community, if we increase that relationship, such as with black people, black owners, black CEOs, so on and so forth. You get what I mean?
I 100% get what you mean, but let me ask you this. Where do you buy your paper towels? Where do you buy your furniture? Where do you buy your soap? Where do you buy your shampoo? Where do you take your kids to eat? Where do you buy your electronics? Where do you buy your TV? You understand what I'm saying? So the $1.3 trillion we spend in, we're not spending it with these brothers and sisters. We're spending it with the people who have the stuff we want. The cold hard truth of this, so this was a conversation a few weeks ago, right? But the cold hard truth is this. Most black businesses don't have the stuff we want to buy. They have the stuff that they can afford to sell us. But, like, we all need cell phones. We're all on cell phones right now. What black company can we go to do that?
Exactly. Right? So that's my point.
No, but that's my point. This organization, everything is based off what we are already doing, right? So this is my personal mantra. Everyone else, they have all the greatest faith in, you know, in the potential of what our brothers and sisters in terms of changing their mindset. And so this was a town hall meeting. Maybe this was last week as well, where we were talking about changing the mindset. I personally do not want the job of trying to change the mindset. I don't want to go out and have to talk to 42 million black people and say, hey, brother, sister, you need to do this, you need to do this. I rather use their existing behavior. I rather use their existing behavior to benefit our cause so that way we could work with the babies. You understand what I'm saying? It's much easier that way. We don't have to convince them. So the other thing, too, about supporting black businesses, right? Who's to say we support the black business and then they are going to recontribute to the black community? There is no formal agreement with those businesses. And so basically all we would be doing is just making just some black people rich, like we got Oprah, Jay-Z, and Beyonce, who would not be contributing back to the community. Everyone who says we should buy black and support black, from all there's only one person I know that like made the complete revolution of thought, which is, okay, cool, we're buying black and supporting black, but who's to say that those people are going to give back to us? Because we already buy black and support black when we support Oprah and Jay-Z and Beyonce and all these other different people and all these rappers and all these other people who actually contribute to our destruction.
There's my brother, no please. Please, my brother, can I interject? Please.
Go ahead, brother.
That's a perfect point. It is built into the system that you, my brother, that I am so thankful for and grateful for that you have created. It is built into the system that we repatronize the same community that is patronizing us. It's built into the system. Mm-hmm. Therein lies your quote-unquote incentive. And furthermore, the reason why we don't have
a black company to be using, to be having this call on, to that sold us the cell phones to have this call on, is because we have not had an incentive in our black community to create, make cell phones. You understand what I'm saying? So
no, I don't know, because profit, no, because for an entrepreneur, profit is the incentive. And when, so let's take Metro PCS and what's the other one? Cricket, right? So Metro PCS and Cricket saw how prosperous it was for AT&T and Sprint and, you know, the majors, and they jumped into the cell phone game. They jumped into the cell phone game because that is the incentive. So that is the only incentive to go into business, profit. Profit is the only incentive. And when,
right.
And so when they saw that, so when they saw that this is a profitable venture, or that this is a profitable thing, someone with the means could have gone into this business, but they didn't. I don't want to. This is we're treading into a territory that might be really sensitive to a lot of brothers and sisters on the call, so I kind of like want to back up off of that, right? But I mean, I just want to tell you to just look around you, right? I am only looking at reality. I only care about what is. It's all cool. Hey, brother, I feel you. Oh, we can do anything, da da da. I am only looking at what is. And people say, oh, we can do anything, but we are not doing it. We are not doing everything. We are not doing anything. We are, our businesses index in a certain range. We are heavily in the health and beauty industry. We're heavily indexed in health and beauty. We're heavily indexed in selling novelty items and things like that. We very barely scratch the surface in technology. We barely scratch the surface in manufacturing. We index very high in sports, entertainment, music, things like that. Those are our areas. We need toilet paper, we need tables, we need computers, we need wires, we need all kinds of things that black people don't make. And there are no black people making it. They aren't making it. I don't know what, I mean, I know what the reason why they aren't making it, but I mean, I'm not going to get into that on that call. We're just not making it. That's the bottom line.
Okay.
So
okay.
Can
I just say this real quick? I agree with you totally. It's just this right here. The reason why we do not have those things, the reason why we're not making those things, is not because we can't. It's because we don't have the color of inclusion, and so we are excluded. Meaning,
This organization, when I talk to everyone, I talk based on facts. What you're saying is not factual. That is not factual at all. There is a black billionaire. There are two black billionaires right now that people don't even know about. And one, this guy named is Robert Smith. This guy is he's a billionaire in the tech industry. There is no white person blocking you saying you can't become a billionaire, you can't do this. There's another contentious billionaire, Byron Allen. He's in the media industry beefing with these white people, going at them head to head.
You misunderstand me. I'm not saying that. We cannot be billionaires because we are excluded by the billionaires from being billionaires. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the businesses there's a group of five businesses that create wealth. That those businesses are distribution, media, and the other three. This is what I'm saying. We cannot. The reason why we are not in the same position that our adversary is because there is loans. When loans are given out, we don't have the capital to where the banks and so on and so forth can get the return on their loans. And the reason for that is because, hell, Donald Trump said it in his thing. We don't want, you know, black people to have that kind of power. Yeah, they can spend all the money that we give them. No problem with it. Nothing wrong with it. But having the resources is something that that they are against, as well as, you know, don't necessarily give into. You get what I mean? So,
brother, I know what you're trying to say, but that's false. They're not worried about black people. They're not worried about black. Go on an alt-right site. Go on an alt-right website where the extremist white people, they are not worried about us organizing, forming anything. There are no banks specifically saying you can't do this. You know why the banks don't lend to black businesses? Because black businesses don't have their ducks in a row. I'm from New York. I know knuckleheads that get loans from the bank. And there's the SBA. You know why? Because they went and got their ducks in a row. They went and got a pro forma. They went and they had their business plan laid out. They went and they formed the team. They have their investment team, right? So those are the things that you need to have a business. You have to have experience. You can't just say, you know what, I'm going to come out of nowhere and start a coaxial cable company, and you have no experience in the coaxial cable business or in the coaxial cable field. The other thing is, it's a different mindset to run a corporation as opposed to running a mom-and-pop business. And that is just a knowledge gap. That is not white people sitting here saying, you can't be in this industry. It's just a knowledge gap. Our people don't do these things because we were never taught. That's all it is. I mean, for anybody on this call, anybody who's listening, there is no white person blocking you from doing anything. If you believe it, it's all in your mind. Walk out your door and say, today I'm going to be a millionaire. There is no black guy standing in front of you going, oh, brother, wrong. No, brother, no, 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 no. There is no white person standing in front of you, because the truth about it is the average white person in this country is suffering now, too. They do not have.
Exactly. That's not what I'm saying.
But you're trying to interject race. You're trying to interject race as a reason why they aren't black people in
the No, sir. That is not what I'm saying.
That's what you said. That's what
okay.
you said.
May I clarify? If you let me clarify, I'll shut up. I promise.
Go ahead, brother.
Okay. What I'm saying is, I'm going to give you a metaphor, and that's the best way I can do it right now. I apologize for that, but that's the best way I can do it right now. If you create an invention that is the best way for anybody to do anything right now, if you create that and you don't give it to anybody else, you are automatically enriched. Point blank, period. If everybody needs what it is that you created, then you automatically get rich. That is how those who are enriched, that is what's known as exclusion. Exclusion. You got to pay me in order to get what it is that you need in order to be better. That's the only thing that I'm saying. It don't matter whether you black, white, red, blue, or purple. It don't matter. And that's what I'm saying. We are that thing that America and the world needs. Never mind. I'm just going to leave it at that. Exclusion is how we get rich. That's all I'm saying. And you.
Your phone went out, brother.
You said that.
I just heard exclusion. I just heard exclusion. I'm confused. I thought, from the exclusion is them. Exclusion is someone excluding you, someone not allowing you to participate in a certain thing, right? That's exclusion.
Exclusion? No, I apologize. That's not what I mean.
You mean exclusivity then? That's what you mean, where you're the only one with it. Exclusivity is what you mean.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Okay, right. Okay, right. I understand it. Right, yes. Exclusivity, that's one way to get rich. But I mean, there's just so many different things that you can do, and we went too far afield, right? So this is a conversation that me and you would probably have this one-on-one, right? Because the whole point of this is, as long as you wake up in the morning and you see a black face and you're like, you know what, my brothers and sisters need to be doing better,
that's all we need to have in common. That, as far as I'm concerned, that's all we need to have in common in order for me and you to work together. From my perspective, you know, your personal philosophy in regards to business and all these other different things, that's on you. I don't want to interrupt. We got a few people that are in the queue right now that want to say something. So I want to give them some time to get in, but I definitely want to leave the floor open to you. And if you can, you know, write down what it is that you want to say, and then I'm going to open the floor back up to you, and then you can say that, and then you can enlighten us if you have more information in terms of, you know, how you feel that we're being limited, right? So there are things that are being done overtly to us, but it's on such a large scale that you would have to be, like I said, you can become a billionaire. You can become a billionaire before you actually start feeling the pressure of where your ceiling is basically what I'm saying. And who of us on this call wouldn't want to just be a billionaire and be like, well, you want to oppress me now? All right, fine. You understand what I'm saying? But
Please email me. Contact me offline, because we really need to have this discussion.
Hang on, brother. Hang on to the call, because there's people who probably want to chime in and support you on what you're saying, because that's how this works. So I'm not.
I'm not going nowhere. I'm here. Going nowhere.
All right. So Sister Bonnie, you want to say something? And I think that's Brother Cooja. Hold on for a second, Sister Bonnie. Let me see who this is. 708. Brother Cooja, is that you? 708? Hello? Brother Cooja.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Is that hey. You, brother?
Yes, it is. How you doing, brother?
All right, cool. All right, well, listen, Sister Bonnie was actually in the queue before you. I just wanted to get you in because I saw that you left and came back. So we'll let Sister Bonnie chime in, and then you can follow right up. All right, brother?
No problem.
All right, cool. Sister? Hello? Sister? Sister Bonnie? Okay. I don't know.
Yes, right, brother, I'm here.
Oh. Hey, what's going on?
Sorry, my phone was muted.
Okay, sister.
I actually agree with both of you. There's a lot of things that we as a people don't provide for our people or anyone else. We don't provide. I agree with that. There's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of businesses out there that are dealing in health and beauty. And they're black-owned businesses. But we have very few grocery stores. We don't have anyone that will build a computer and sell it. You know, it's real easy to get your hands on an old computer and gut it and then replace all the stuff in it. It's not that difficult. But we don't have that, and we need that. We need to be supplying ourselves with everything we need, not some of it. Now, granted, we had to start somewhere. Now, there is one company that is supplying toilet paper and another one that's supplying soap and another one that's supplying laundry detergent, and these are all black-owned. But I think we need to maybe poll some of these companies and find out what are they doing to give back to the community. What are you doing to give back to the community? I know the guy that's doing the laundry soap, he actually hires our brothers and sisters to work for him. And he manufactures his own soap and sells it. But what is he doing other than, you know, I guess we got to start somewhere, and with hiring some of our people to work in your company, that's a start. But what are you doing for the youth in your neighborhood and in your community where you live? What are you doing? Do you have a youth center? Do you have anything to teach them how to start a business, how to do plumbing or electrical, how to build things? We need all of that. We need all of that. And believe me, there's people out there that know how to do it. There are black people out there that know how to do these things. They're just not doing them. So my question is, how do we find some of these people, and how do we get them to participate in their own community? Or do we get them to participate?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I'll be honest with you. I really don't think that's just going to be effective. It's not going to be effective unless we're able to have some kind of influence, right? So if we go and we tell them, hey, listen, we have a million people, and you know, you come and you hook us up, or you do X, Y, Z, and we're able to send a million people towards your business. And if you don't, then, you know, well, actually, I don't think we would be boycotting them or anything. But, I mean, that's just the only thing, right? So you have to have some kind of benefits for the people that you are talking to, that, you know, whatever it is that you're offering them. And that's,
right.
I mean, and that's just the bottom line. And right now we don't have the numbers to do that. In terms of actually getting people on board to teach the things that we need, it's simple. You pay them. Which is another reason why we need the numbers and the money, right? Because you can get anybody to do anything if you're just like, hey, listen, I'm going to pay you. This is your job. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not, I mean, it's not really rocket science. I mean, everything falls back to the blueprint. Everything falls back to the blueprint. Because without numbers to tell a business, hey, listen, I can send you XYZ amount of customers. Anything you say to him is just rhetoric, because the bottom line is he just wants you to send him, show him the money. And if you're able to get the customers in, and we're like, hey, but listen, you know, we're launching a community center here, and we want you to be a supporter or whatever it is. You're like, oh, yeah. Of course, he'll be more than happy to contribute. But right now, to be an entrepreneur is very hard, and if he has to go and, you know, spend his own hard-earned marketing dollars to get the customers, and he has to try to, you know, keep his business together with spit and glue and duct tape, he's not obligated to do anything for anyone, to be honest with you. You brought your product. That's what you got. That's what you got off the deal. You wanted XYZ. You brought it. You got it. You know, and I'm saying that as an entrepreneur of 20 years, and it's like I didn't wake up until, well, no, I mean, I don't know if it was my mother. It probably was. So, like, my mother, she made me, my first year, so I saved up money. I went and brought a Lexus when I first started making money. And my mother was like, boy, you better give back to that community. And so that November, we had the dinners for Thanksgiving. And then the next year, we did the book bags, and then we did the dinners, and then we did something for Christmas and stuff like that. So that's the only reason why I gave back to my black community, is because my mother put the bug in my ear and was like, listen, boy, this is what I expect of you. But if it wasn't for that, the community wasn't demanding that I give back, and there was no one else there, and there was no one there holding me accountable. So, you know, it's you know, that's what I always say. When I took that money and brought a Lexus, I didn't buy that Lexus from a black man. I brought that Lexus from a freaking, I don't even remember, probably some maybe Israeli or something like that, probably Jewish or whatever, whoever the guy at the dealer was, white guy, something like that. So, Brother Cujo, press *6 again, brother. Get back in the queue. Sister Bonnie, anything else you want to add to that?
No, one other thing that I wanted to say, though,
I wanted to let you know that I did see and listen to your interview with Brother Rossi.
Okay.
It was good. It was excellent.
Thank you.
It was, I had to repost that because that was an excellent interview.
Okay.
And
well, thank you. Much appreciated.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Thank you. I gotta get a copy from Brother Rossi to share with the share with our organization. Yep, I have to get a copy.
Okay, because what I did was I shared it on a Black History page. And everybody that listened to it loved it.
Okay, great, great. Make sure you tell them to come to Black Wallets Matter.
I am. That was the whole idea.
All right. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. All right, Brother Cujo, you're up. All right, thank you, Sister Bonnie.
Yeah, well.
Brother Cujo.
How you doing, brother?
Hey, all right.
I just, hello to everybody. I just want to make sure you can hear me because I'm kind of coming through the middle of nowhere right now.
Okay.
All right. I was thinking about something that the point that Brother Ron was making, and it sounded kind of to me like he was asking about the order of operations, about when to start working together to build Black businesses, and that seemed something that was kind of important to him. And I kind of just wanted to reiterate something that's in the blueprint. And as far as the order of operations, and just speak to the value of doing the shopping portal, I say from a real simple standpoint, it's harder to start a business. And from everything that I've learned from the blueprint and actually talking to you, it's going to be, for one, it's going to be more cost effective to actually start out with the shopping portal, and opposed to going through the process of starting like a brick and mortar business or even some different little internet business or something like that. The way the shopping portal works is we'll be able to, in a short amount of time, promote this to thousands of people that we're only getting kickbacks from the regular shopping that they already do. And this, obviously, if anybody looked into it, it has the potential to produce a substantial amount of money. I mean, I think I could righteously say in a relatively short amount of time, in a couple of years, it'd be producing in the range of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Millions, bro.
I know, but I mean, in a short amount of time, even thinking about the scope of having the 2,000 members, and everybody will be able to see in a short amount of time. Now, the value of this is that the money is being funneled to places where we most need it, and this will actually help start those other businesses, like for getting government contracts and stuff like that. I'm saying some of these things for anybody that perhaps hasn't been through the blueprint thoroughly, and for people that are new, so you can understand from a real basic level. This is a reality that's in the making. And it's very attainable. And it gives us the opportunity to all be working together and with a common purpose, common goal in mind, and everybody has input in what's going on. And just so I just want to – I see the vision for it. I see it. I understand it. I look at the blueprint sometimes just because – and, I mean, we have conversation on a regular basis, but I see the potential for growth happening in a very short amount of time. I don't think it's going to take a long time for us to get this initial 2,000 members, and this in this way we have money actually working for us a lot faster than it takes to start up a new business.
100%, brother. You pretty much summarize. You pretty much summarize exactly, you know, the essence of what we're trying to do, right? So once we get this initial project off the ground, once we get the shopping portal off the ground, this we could be able to say to the Black community, look at what the Black community did. Look at what the Black community created. Even though we would be posting this like on Facebook, and there would be a whole bunch of people who probably never even heard of Black Wallets Matter and didn't contribute a dime, we are saying that we are doing this from a spirit of unity and solidarity with all our brothers and sisters. And once they're able to see something, now we're just providing a really, really simple, easy way to support. Right, because it's like, okay, cool. You're already going to be shopping. It's going to be Christmas. It's going to be back to school. It's going to be Halloween. It's going to be that. And by you going to the normal things that you're already going to buy, the normal things that you're going to do, it's going to contribute back to the Black community. And then that's the first model that we will actually get to see how it's going to be used to grow. And then, I mean, brother, you summarized the essence. So, Brother Rome, if you want to chime back in, that's essentially what this whole thing is about, right? So we're just trying to get the first, we call it a proof element. We're trying to get the first proof element to show to the community at large. Like, hey, we've been working undercover. Some of you guys may have been seeing our posts. Some of you guys may have been seeing our advertisements. But this is what we've been doing behind the scenes, and we did this for you. Here's how you can get behind it. Doesn't matter what your political beliefs are, your sexual orientation, or whatever it is. If you see a Black face in a mirror and you walk out your door and you're saying, damn, you know what, the situation or the state of affairs in the Black community needs to be improved, then this is for you. And then this is also another way that outside supporters would be able to contribute to the cause without actually having their noses in what we're actually doing, you know. So, you know, I just wanted to, you know, thank you, Brother Cujo, for bringing that up. Does anyone have any questions? Let's see. Does anyone have any questions about the shopping portal? About, because this is exactly what our first phase of our plan is, right? So, Sister Bisa, you've been on a gazillion calls. Brother Jay, Sister Charmaine, well, I know you guys understand. But anybody else, Brother William, Brother D, Press Star 6, do you guys have any questions in regards to why we need this first piece of, why we need this first proof element, or why we need this shopping portal? From anybody, any kind of questions, any comments or whatever. Brother Rome, if you want to press Star 6 again, your wife, if she wants to chime in, have her chime in as well. Because this is really important, because we're talking about doing a lot of different things. We're talking about a lot of, a lot of questions. We're talking about a lot of problems in the Black community. But realistically speaking, this is exactly where our dollars are going to first, so that we can grow it into more dollars, so that we can get more support from more members of the community. Okay, so we have Sister Barbara. Sister Barbara, you already know what this is about. We talk about it all the time. All right, Sister Barbara. All right, Brother Cujo, you got it?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Sister Barbara. Sister Barbara.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. My question is this. I know about the shopping portal.
Uh-huh.
And that I don't have a question with. My question is, when are we going to start talking to these Black-owned businesses that are out there? Like, there are quite a few out there on the net that we could probably reel in. to find out if they're putting money back into their community, into our black community, and get them on board, because that would be product that we could access.
So you mean include them in the shopping portal? Well, then, I mean, like I said, so the biggest thing is you want to be able to bring them some numbers, right? So it makes no sense for us to go out and reach. So there are directories and there are places that where you can go and, you know, support black businesses, find them locally and things like that. That's really not the problem. The problem is, and I mean it is what it is. The average black person is just, that's just not what they're looking for. They're looking to do what they do and buy what they want to buy. Reaching out to these businesses would come as a byproduct of once the portal is developed. But being that this is on the internet, unless someone has a product or something that can be widely distributed, we're not going to be looking for local businesses to put them in it, right? Because that would just be, it's a lot of work for a little reward, right? So we find a soul food restaurant in St. Louis, that's really not going to benefit the group in turn. It's not going to benefit the group to add them to the portal, because who's going to St. Louis to get soul food? And I was thinking about Sweetie Pie specifically when I said that. So, and actually,
well, no,
you know,
I may take a trip out there just to go see,
but I'm just saying, though, like, I haven't done it yet.
So I plan on doing that next month.
to go see Sweetie Pies, right? Yeah,
I'll be in St. Louis next month. But
right,
no, my question isn't about the restaurants and the catering businesses and that kind of thing. It's about the ones that have actual product that they are marketing on the internet that are black owned.
Once we have the portal, they're not going to be priority number one, because I'm going to tell you what the problem is going to be. I'm going to tell you what the number one problem is going to be. We're going to talk to them and we're going to say, hey, brother, hey, sister, how you doing? Hey, you got this business right here? Hey, listen, we have XYZ amount of people, or we have this organization. So we send people your way. Would you give us back? Could you give us a kickback or give us a percentage back on what we contribute? They're going to be like,
okay.
I'm barely breaking even. You know our people. You know how it is. Then they're going to be like, well, how are we going to do it? And then when we sit down and we start talking about the technology, there's going to be technological challenges, because a lot of them, the stores I look at, like how they have the stores set up online. Well, with Shopify, maybe it might be a little easier, but some of them with like some of the ways that they have their stores and their things set up, it's going to be really, really hard to merge the technology. And so that would really require a lot of input on their behalf. And I mean, let's just be honest. You think they're really going to do it? Do you really think our brothers and sisters, based on your experience with our brothers and sisters, you think they're really going to do it?
I don't know.
All right, well,
I'm going to be honest. I don't really know.
Okay. Well, you are free. Once we have the portal, sister, you know you can call shots too. I'm not the only one calling shots. You are more than welcome to reach out. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. But I am telling you from the preliminary conversations that I have had with people just trying to come together with pulling our organizations together. It's like pulling teeth.
I know.
It's like pulling teeth. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So this is a brother or a sister who has another organization that is contributing to the black community or trying to build something for the black community. And I mean, you know, well, I know you kind of retired like the past couple of months, but for like the past couple of weeks, we've had other organizations. We were allowing other organizations to come on this platform and promote what it is that they were doing, because it's like, I just want everyone to, I want everyone to feel comfortable. I want everyone to know about all the different options, all the different brothers and sisters that are out there doing what they're doing. Aside from Brother Rossi, I haven't had any other, which was the interview that that Sister Bonnie was talking about. Aside from doing that interview with Restore Black America, none of the other people that we brought on the call reciprocated, right? So they're like, oh well, you know, we might bump heads. You guys are collecting you guys are collecting an association fee. These are, you know, we trying to raise money. We got to GoFundMe. We got this. So you had those kinds of clashes. And this is, you know, these are brothers and sisters who are supposed to be talking about rebuilding the black community together. So, I mean, I'm just being a realist. I know with the businesses that we're talking about working with, I already spent the money. We already have the We already have the relationships. And that you know, and I already know that the technology is possible. I know the technology is there. So you have anything else you want to contribute?
I just want to I'm interested in that conversation between you and the other brother that was speaking about what was he talking about? I forgot.
Well, press star six when you remember.
Okay.
All right, sister. All right, Brother Rome. Yep. Go ahead, brother.
My brother, it seems like the other callers are in agreement with the unity. Now, one of the things that was most prevalent on the page or whatnot that we looked at was how we need unity. And unity needs to be based in something. Obviously, we cannot be unified in such things as religion. We can't even be unified in the things that we spend money on. You get what I'm saying? But we can be unified in how we spend our money. We can be unified in who we spend our money with.
Mm-hmm.
And that, above anything else, especially as you so eloquently described to us, is how we spend our money with each other. The most basic thing, the thing that gets us to the table, how we will be able to buy lobbyists, so on and so forth, is through the money and being able to say, you know what? We got so many companies, so many companies make this much money, so on and so forth, to where these laws need to be enacted in order to give our people protection. I mean, you gave us the blueprint. I'm just asking, and we are just asking that print by any means.
Your phone went out, brother. Your phone went out. I just heard you gave us the blueprint, and that's all I heard.
Okay, you gave us the blueprint, and all I'm saying is all we're asking is that the blueprint be utilized, enacted. We shouldn't just restrict our patronage to these, you know, to the same companies that lobby only for themselves, such as Walmart, Amazon, so on and so forth. We should definitely use our patronage in order to uplift our community, such as the black owner, the black owned businesses. And if we don't have a business in technology, cell phones, so on and so forth, then we need to encourage our youth, our young people, to build those types of businesses. Why? Because we will have 1 million people by when? What you said, 2019?
Yeah, with three to five years, yeah. No, so 2020 and yeah. No, I hear you, but here's the thing: we're not going to get there unless we're not going to get. So the portal, this is like now, right? So that's now, and that's with like 2,000 people. So that's before we even get there, because we're going to.
Brother, I understand that. I understand that, brother. I understand that this is now. I get that. What I'm saying is that we should include businesses that are open now, that are doing business now, into that.
You mean black businesses that are
black vendors? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Black vendors. Yes, sir.
Right. That's what we can build business.
I'm sorry. Just let me finish this right quick. I'm sorry. We can also build business off of this, such as black-owned distribution. If we have enough people buying from, I don't know what company that is that distributes the toilet paper, but if we get enough enough purchases, let's say in the Western conference, the Western region, for the black-owned toilet paper, then we can pay our own distributors, the people that drive the trucks, the people that, you know, we can pay for space on the 18-wheelers to take those pallets of toilet paper over to the West Coast, over to the East Coast, down South, Northwest. You get what I'm saying? We can build a distribution network.
That's all in the blueprint. That's in the blueprint. It's definitely in there. We were talking more so about, like, you know, how we would actually get there, right? So to distribute it, I don't even know where the toilet paper company is based, but to distribute it nationwide, we would need like a nationwide marketing campaign, right? So we would need nationwide awareness. And then you would need the relationships with the retail outlets, right? So that's going to require that presents a lot of jobs, right? So then we would have a lot of brothers and sisters who would be able to go out there and become what's called jobbers. Jobbers are the people that you see in the store that put up the racks and put the stuff on the racks or whatever. So we could definitely do that. But I mean, like I said, it's going to have to start from someplace. It's going to have to start from someplace. And we're not going to be able to do anything without money. We're not going to do nothing until we have money. And, I mean, right now, our brothers and sisters, I hear you, you know, saying we need more black businesses and we need this and this. The bottom line is our brothers and sisters don't support black businesses like that. They don't shop at black businesses like that. And there's a whole bunch of reasons. There's a whole bunch of reasons why. People are unhappy with the customer service. They don't have the product. They jacking up on the prices. So unless you're talking about like a restaurant, a barbershop, beauty salon, something like that, right where we traditionally go to, anything else, our people have some kind of hesitation, trepidation. This organization is not going to win any battles fighting against what our people do. We're not going to make any progress telling people what they should do, because if you look at history, that has never worked. That has never worked. We're not going to miraculously be the ones throughout history who are able to tell black people, you know what you need to be doing, you should be doing this, and then they're going to go, hey, you know what, you're right, and then change their behavior. We're not going to be the ones to do that. It's not going to happen. What we need to do is use their existing behavior and their existing shopping habits, the way how it's already going, use that to our advantage. If we're able to get some brothers and sisters that own businesses, if we're able to get them on board, so like I explained to Sister Barbara, even talking, I've been already networking with a lot of people who have other movements. It's been hard for them, for us to even come to an agreement. And basically I said to them, hey, listen, let me put my foot forward first. Let me expose my audience to your message. Let me expose my audience to the things that you're doing, and then we can figure out how we can cross-promote or come back and do all of this. It's been hard. Like I said, I've only had one brother who followed up on that. I'm not knocking anyone, but I'm just trying to let you know that that's the kind of challenge that we're facing. When I was composing the blueprint, doing research on the thing, I found someone with the relationship with the retailers that we needed. The guy said, how many people are you going to bring to me? I said, anywhere from 2,000, 5,000, whatever it was. He said, okay, cool. He said, this is what it's going to cost. the minimum is going to be you're going to have to pay $1 a month per for the 5,000 people. So that's $5,000 a month is what it would cost for us to have the relationship. I spent the $5,000. I gave the guy the money, and we never used it because we don't have the members. So I was speaking to Brother Cujo the other day. I said it's a good thing he's being kind of cool about the way how he's doing it, and he's not charging us. But I already put my best foot forward for the organization or for our brothers and sisters. I continue to do that. We're going to have some brothers and sisters who just aren't going to get it. They're going to be like, something's fishy. Even once the portal was launched and we tell people, hey, you know what? It's not going to cost you anything. You shop through here. You're going to be able to get discounts, this, that, that. You're still going to have some black people that's going to be like, I don't get it. It don't make sense to me. It's fishy. It's whatever. And then just not going to support for whatever. Or they're going to be like, well, what y'all doing with the money? We're telling you what we're doing with the money. We are reinvesting in the black community. We can't come to you directly and tell you to invest.
My brother, if I may. Yeah. If I may, brother, where are you based out of?
New York. I'm from New York.
You're from New York. Is that where you live, though? Is that where you are?
No, I live in Jersey.
In Jersey. Okay. What? My point is this, because I understand everything that you're saying right now, but if we had just a list of black home truck drivers. Uh-huh. I said, let's say we had a list of black-owned truck drivers or distribution managers that we could call and say, you know what, we got so much of such product from such and such company, we need it to go to such and such location. If we had just that, that would be the beginning of distribution for our community.
But how are you selling
it? You understand what I'm saying?
No, I hear what you're saying, but how are you selling it, though? Because do you have any business experience, brother? I have.
My brother, I'm not selling anything. I'm not selling anything. I'm trying to contribute to the structure of our community. That's all.
Right,
I've been thinking about this. I love you. You see what I'm saying? I'm passionate about this, and I admire the way that you have marketed this community to our people. My wife and I both. We both are excited about it. We just trying to figure out, like, how can we get involved? We need give us a playbook. Let me run that shit. You see what I'm saying?
Brother, all you have to do is watch the blueprint, and if it resonates with you, then you could become a member.
The blueprint didn't answer these questions, sir.
The blueprint, in regards to what the distribution, the questions that you're at. All right, so I'm not trying to be rude, but the questions you're asking are not really quite, they're not well formulated, right? Because you're saying we would have distribution, but you don't distribute anything without sales first, right? Or without having a sales channel. You only distribute products if they're going to be sell or they're going to be sold, or if there's like a marketing thing, right? So when you see Walmart running an ad for detergent or whatever, the reason they're running the ad on TV is because they have Walmarts everywhere. You're seeing the ad, you can get up and go to the store, and then there's the thing. And so if we go and we distribute, we have these black truck drivers that are going to distribute, where are they distributing to? Who are they distributing to? Where's the stores? What is the relationship?
We buy the space on the truck. Now they can take whatever sales or whatever space is bought on their truck from whatever company. From the Black Wallace company, we have, let's say, 200 square feet of space on their truck, top to bottom, of nothing but toilet paper. If that's all that need to go to the Oakland, California, and if he going that way, he going to sell it to us at a Black Wallet's price.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Okay, and then when it gets to Oakland, then what happens to it? So he drops the freight, and then what happened? Where does he drop it?
There is a store. There is a black owned.
It's already bought. It's a, there is a black owned grocery store in It's in Compton, California, right now, by a sister who is what's she 27 years old? 38. She's 38 years old right now. That needs to be able to sell our product in her store. What's the name of the place, baby?
You're talking about an individual. You're talking about something on an individual level. I don't know if I fully understand what you're trying to say. Because if there's a black owned store that you know about, and it's like, okay, you know, we need to get her, you know, this black owned toilet paper. That's kind of not like distribution. That's just facilitating a particular transaction. We have a brother that's in the queue who knows exactly about this because he works in this space. We have Brother Cujo in the queue. We also have Sister Bonnie, but I'm going to let Brother Cujo answer this better because this is what he does. So he's actually in transportation, and maybe he can explain it to you from a better perspective, because what you're saying to me is, just having distribution doesn't work without sales, right? Because you're just distributing a bunch of stuff, and then it's not reaching an endpoint for it to be sold. And if you are a black business owner in a particular place and you're selling something, then you figured out your own distribution on your own. But I'm going to let Brother Cujo answer that. I'm going to click you out the queue, but then I'm going to unmute you. So then you'll be able to talk directly with the brother, okay?
My brother, I don't have any products to sell. Listen to me, please. I am a black man taking care of my family who is passionate about uplifting our people. That's all. I don't have no product to sell at all at the moment. You understand what I'm saying?
I know you don't have a product, but what I'm
no,
saying.
No, listen to me, brother. Brother, please. Just let me finish. Okay? I'm not advertising for my own company. I'm not doing nothing of the sort. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not doing nothing like that. All I'm saying is that I see where our people are failing each other at. And most importantly, it is unity. What breeds unity is need. That is what, if we all need the same things, then that is how we unify ourselves. If we provide what we need for each other, that is how we unify ourselves. And all I'm saying is, and I'm going to get off, I ain't going to say nothing else. I'm going to pay attention to the rest of the conversation, and I ain't going to say nothing else. All I'm saying is, ourselves, like you so eloquently put into, you know, your description of what the community is, then that will breed unity and fix a lot of the problems that we have in our community. We haven't even gotten into education and how that can solve a whole bunch of the issues that we're dealing with. We haven't even gotten to that. But that's all I'm saying.
It's in the blueprint. We didn't go in depth, but it's in there. I'm going to let Brother Cujo chime in.
Thank you, brother.
That's what the Community Resource Center is about. That. Hold on. Brother Cujo?
Hey, how you doing?
Brother,
can you
hear me? How you doing? Yep, I can hear you.
Good. Thanks. I appreciate your enthusiasm and your passion, Brother Ram. I like to hear that from you, man. And I'm glad that you're eager to actually do something. You want to put your feet on the ground and get to running and make some stuff happen. And I'm excited by your enthusiasm. But there are some, when it comes down to the business and actually getting some stuff done, there's protocol that's pretty much set already on how business is going to work in certain aspects of it. You know, I really do understand that you're passionate and you're throwing out some ideas and stuff like that, but it don't exactly work like that because you don't necessarily you don't buy space on a truck, my truck or nobody else's. There may be some situations where you can buy shelf space, but in reality, you know, just like when any product is sold, it's based on the demand. And like Brother Lou was saying, there has to be that demand that's created, and of course, that demand that's created is going to come through marketing, and the availability of the product and a place to put it in. It just doesn't start from the distribution or the transportation. It starts from basically building that idea or that wanting for that particular product, and that's going to come through marketing and sales. And transportation in, we just get it there. And the structure is set up a little bit different in transportation where, I mean, we may charge by weight or quantity, but it don't have too much to do with the sales outside of whoever is shipping that product or receiving it, how much they agree to pay me to take it there. But as far as having it in the store, that's a whole different side of the business. But like I said again, I do appreciate your enthusiasm and passion, and I would encourage you to, and along with everybody else, but like I said earlier, I look back at the blueprint, kind of like reading a book, you know. Sometimes you just go back over it. If I miss any little thing or anything anywhere where I can see benefit or serve benefit, I think it's a good thing, you know. And I'm actually really glad that this town hall meeting focuses a lot on some specifics of the blueprint. And I love for people to understand it so we can all be vibing on the same thing, and we know exactly what we're doing, what our intentions and motive is, and we understand the process so that wherever we can serve benefit, we can jump right in. And like Brother Lou was saying earlier, everybody has the opportunity to give and share input. Hello?
Yep, we still here.
Another thing I wanted to add is as far as us working in line with this with the blueprint, as the scope of what we're doing, this is actually a very huge thing. It's starting off small, but this is going to be a huge thing because you don't have black organizations and black businesses that are making, that are producing like hundreds of millions of dollars a year and actually serving to benefit the black community in specific ways that are all laid out in the blueprint when it comes to actually providing jobs. We're not talking about begging everybody or begging the government, could you please do this for us? Could you please do that? We're not talking about walking down the street saying, please don't hit me. Please don't shoot my kids. What we're doing is we're taking a more aggressive approach and being responsible and understanding that in the society that we live in, it takes money to make stuff happen. And the way the blueprint is laid out and these initial stages with setting up this shopping portal and having the membership dues coming in, when we're at our zenith, having that million people, I mean, anybody can do the math. 28 with an average of $28 per person, a million people every month. We don't have that kind of resource now that's actually being used for us. In a way, we're building a machine that actually is going to work. We can pound and make this dollar mean something. And of course, along the way, after we build up the membership and also have this shopping portal going, which will stand to make millions of dollars per year, that'll be funneled into our efforts as a co-op, all working together. Yes, we're going to start. Yes, we're going to start businesses, and yes, we're going to have black businesses. But this, from the beginning, this gives us the fuel. This gives us some leverage to work with, so that we're not going around begging nobody for nothing. We all are taking part in it. We're given our dues, and we contribute with just spending money how we normally have to. Yeah, we all want to be able to shop from black businesses and stuff. That's why we're doing this, so we can create them, so we can create good functioning black businesses and create large companies like manufacturing companies that actually employ a lot of people. And it's all for our benefit. I mean, this is something that's like life changing. I feel privileged to be a part of it, you know, being one of the founding members, because I see the vision, the blueprint that's already there, and this will be part of my legacy to have been a part of this. And I plan on doing this, being a part of this and building it for the rest of my life. I mean, it's an amazing situation. It'll far supersede anything that the efforts that have been made before, and it's all of that input that comes from other ethnicities and other cultures, it's just not there with this. Anybody can look through the blueprint and see the value of it, and see the value that yourself individually can bring to it. And I think even these town hall meetings, it kind of sets the stage to show everybody's value and incorporation into it. And having cordial conversation, getting down to the understanding of things and how this thing is going to work and where we can work together. And it leaves opportunity also for us to be able to network. I love some of the things that I hear, and I may incorporate in my life because I'm seeing the benefit of it. I'm glad to say that it comes from one of my brothers and sisters. So,
thank you, brother.
That's pretty much what I wanted to say for now.
Thank you, brother. All right, Sister Bonnie wants to chime in as well. Hold on, Sister Bonnie. Hello, sister. Oh, what's going on here? Sister?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep, can. Yes, we can.
Okay. I wanted to address that as well because I have a distribution background, and I've worked in the field, and I have a degree in the field, and I understand what this brother is talking about. However, like Brother Cujo said, it does not work that way. First off, you got to have a product. Then the person that has the product has to market that product. They have to sell that product. And they've got to do their end of it in marketing. Or, for instance, the young lady you were talking about that has the store in Compton, she could contact him and say, hey, I want to carry your stuff. Then we got to worry about, okay, how much is she getting? How much, you know, it goes to a distribution center in most cases. And then it would go to Brother Cujo. He would pick it up there and he would deliver it. Or he would pick it up at the manufacturer and deliver it. So it's not as simple as a lot of people think, but I'm not going to say it's not doable. It is, but we're not to that point yet. We're not to that point yet. We got to start small, and we got to, you know, be consistent in what we do, and then we'll get there. But we got to have the membership as well. So I've been kind of working two angles on the membership and then on also the building or trying to get built a distribution company that would distribute the products that we need in our community. And I hope that answers your question. I hope it does.
All right, sister. Okay, so it is 11:35. I think this one, we can call this one, we can put this one in the bag. That's all you wanted to say, sister?
That's what I wanted to say.
Okay. All right, so let me open it up. Okay, wait, the brother has something, I guess he wants to chime back in. Hold on. Yep.
Family. I would just, can we get a community contact list so that we can talk amongst the community? That's all I'm asking for. I said I wasn't going to say nothing else. That's all I'm asking for.
What do you mean? You mean to? Well, we have a Facebook group that's for members specifically. I add members to it. It hasn't been that active, so.
Okay.
but we do have it though.
Okay. Good. Thank you so much.
All right, bro. Okay, so that concludes that. All right, brothers and sisters, I'm going to unmute everybody, and we are going to wrap this one up.
All righty.
All right. Yep. So everyone have a good night. I'm going to stop recording, and I guess I will see you guys next week. Anybody have anything they want to add before they, you know?
I have one thing.
Go ahead.
I think Golden State just won.
Yeah, I know. They did. They did.
I muted my TV, but I was watching it anyway.
Yeah, I had mine on too. All right, sisters. All right, have a good one.
All righty. Have a good evening, everybody, and we'll be talking.
Bye.
Bye-bye.